Hello, this is recorded after the fact. It is, this is a recording for the class for May 5th at 9:30 a.m. I'm recording this afterwards because I wasn't too happy with how the recording turned out yesterday. I'm recording this on Monday. I'm not too happy with how it came out yesterday. Part of it was because the recording was messed up, I was distracted during it, and so my mind wasn't completely on the class, and so I fear that it didn't come out quite like it should have. And so for the recording, I would like to have this now so that we can, so that whoever wants to listen to this will be able to do so. And it will be a good thing. Right now, we will be concluding the period of the judges, and that is that will end with the coronation of Saul, King Saul, and that's actually going to be at the end of 1 Samuel chapter 11. But we're going to continue on in chapter 12 because that seems to be in the same year, the same day, or roughly that the coronation happens and Samuel addresses the people there in 1 Samuel chapter 12. So I have last time I gave out a table, and it should be linked in this entry, a table that gives a timeline, a possible timeline for the period of the judges. Again, all these dates are subject to opinion. There are a few that are a little bit more sure, and those are the ones that are in bold, and that is because of the Jephthah timestamp in Judges 11:26. That 300-year mark that is talked about. I think that is a round figure, honestly, and we'll talk a little bit more about that later because that proves somewhat relevant later on. So I want to talk about this table a little bit. I feel like we've talked about the first couple of pages. What I want to do, what I feel like I need to do, I should say, is talk about things that are that are not in the narrative. What I mean is, I have things in a particular order that is different than how the Bible presents them. And I feel like I need to justify why I have them in a different order than what the Bible has them in. And we've already talked about a few of those things. For instance, at the bottom of the first page, Gideon's brothers being killed at Tabor. I think we talked about that last time. So I'm not going to talk about that again. But a few other things, such as at the beginning of the third page, I believe, Jephthah, I have written down there that he joins a gang in Tob. And that is at the beginning of Judges chapter 11. In Judges chapter, Jephthah is one of the judges. He only judges for 6 years. But he's got two chapters dedicated to him, so he is one of those kinds of judges. He's famous. The most famous thing that he's known for is the incident with his daughter, and sacrificing her as a burnt offering. At least that's how it reads in our English Bibles, in Judges chapter 11. There is, as rather controversial subject, even among strict Bible believers, but it is something that I think isn't quite relative to this class. It's not germane to this particular class. So I don't want to derail the class too much talking about that, but I don't want to have very many questions in your mind about that, so I'm going to link to an article that talks about it in more detail because it is something that skeptics will try to throw at us, trying to talk about how Jephthah was praised, and yet he had done this to his daughter. Well, some people think that he did sacrifice his daughter literally in this sense, and others will say that that he merely dedicated her to service to the Lord in the tabernacle. And so we'll I'll leave that link so you can take a look at that and study that at your own discretion. The Jephthah here in this particular section that I'm talking about at the beginning of Judges chapter 11, we note that Jephthah was the son of a man and son of a man named Gilead who had a son with a harlot, and that son was Jephthah. And later on, Gilead's wife has children, and these children, when they grow up, they are not too happy with Jephthah, so they kick him out. Jephthah joins a gang, essentially, in the land of Tob. I have on here that he is, well, that's what I call it, a gang. In the Bible, in verse 3, it says, of chapter 11, Judges chapter 11, it says that it's a band of worthless men. And this is in the land of Tob. And essentially, it's a gang, and that's why I call it that. Now, we talked about last time that the Ammonite and the Philistine oppression occur at the same time, as we see in Judges chapter 10, around verses 5 through 18. And when this occurs, we see that that these things do happen at the same time, but Judges chapter 11 and 12 focus on the Ammonite oppression, whereas 13 through 16 focus on the Philistine oppression. So 11 through 12, the Ammonite oppression, they attack on the east side of the Jordan. The tribes that are on that side, East Manasseh, Gad and Reuben, they attack that side, and Jephthah frees that side of the Jordan of oppression, whereas some of the other judges, Ibzan, Elon, Abdon, and Samson, operate on the west side of the Jordan and work on those tribes concerning the Philistines and perhaps maybe some other places as or some other people who are against them, as Elon may be working in the north, and maybe the Philistines aren't quite that far up there, but maybe they are. Jephthah is working there, but he was kicked out and was a part of this gang before the Ammonite oppression, and we can see this in Judges chapter 11, verse 4. It came to pass after a time that the people of Ammon made war against Israel. Now, it says after a time. This is after Jephthah was kicked out and joins this gang. So that's why I have Judges 11, 1 through 3 before some events in Judges chapter 10. And so that's where that occurs. Now, I want to look at one thing I feel like I must justify is why I believe Samson and Samuel are concurrent judges. Samuel, I don't think, really judges until, at least, it doesn't say that he judges until after the Philistines are conquered, when the Philistines are conquered. But we'll see this in, well, what I want to do is I want to first justify why I place Samson toward the end of the Philistine oppression, and why I place Samuel where I do. And because I place Samuel here, will also determine where Eli is placed and where Hannah is placed in 1 Samuel, in the first seven chapters of 1 Samuel. And so that's why these things are where they are. So Samson is placed where he is because he is, in Judges chapter 13, this is the beginning of the Philistine oppression. We see that after this begins, that the angel of the Lord appears to Manoah's wife and later to Manoah as well, which are Samson's parents. And he promises them a son who would be a judge of Israel and deliver or judge them concerning the Philistines. So he must have been born after Philistine oppression begins. And so I have him placed as, because he judges for 20 years, as we see at the end of Judges 16, and it's mentioned in one other place too. He judges for 20 years, and so that means that, so normally, as if you're familiar with how I place things, I put somebody starting at around 20, doing anything significant. And that is especially warrior type stuff. And so we see at the end of Judges 13 that he has, that the Spirit of the Lord has come upon him. Now I believe he was in so Dan is in two places. Dan is in, Samson is of the tribe of Dan, and there's a southern section of Dan and the northern section of Dan that people, some people had migrated, formerly called Laish, and we talked about that earlier. I believe he's in the lower section because he's going against the Philistines, and plus a lot of the names of the towns that he is fighting are in that area. So not all of the Danites left the area near Benjamin and Judah and went up north. A lot of them remained there, and they are, at least Samson is, going up against the Philistines. So Samson, again, he begins, I believe, at 20. And at the end of his life, he has been blinded. He was tricked by his lover, Delilah. And he was imprisoned, and his strength had left him. And he had found his strength again enough to destroy the temple of the Philistines and have it crash upon him, and killing many Philistines, including all the five lords of the Philistines. And so that put a huge dent in the Philistine. It doesn't say that Samson delivered Israel, but it does say that he judged them for 20 years. I believe that this put a huge dent in the Philistine strength and allowed for Samuel to go up against the Philistines in 1 Samuel 7 in a way that made it a lot easier for them, because the Philistines were in such a state of disarray by this point. And this is how the Lord works very often. So he is killed, and so that would place his death toward the end of Philistine oppression. And so again, that's another reason for placing him where I do. Now, why do I place Samuel in this particular spot as well? Well, we see the Philistine oppression begin in Judges 13, or at least talked about beginning in Judges 13, but we don't read about it ending. Remember, Judges 17 through 21 take place far earlier in the time of the judges. So we should move, at least in time of the chronology, from Judges 16 into 1 Samuel chapter 1, which, again, that isn't even chronological. But the Philistine oppression occurs at around this time. So the only time we see, or rather the first time that we see that the Philistines had been subdued is in 1 Samuel chapter 7. And in 1 Samuel chapter 7, in the first several verses, we see that, let me turn there, we see in the first few verses. Then the men of Kirjath-Jearim came and took the ark of the Lord and brought it into the house of Abinadab on the hill and consecrated Eleazar his son to keep the ark of the Lord. So it was that the ark remained in Kirjath-Jearim a long time. It was there 20 years, and all the house of Israel lamented after the Lord. So if we remember, the Ark of the Covenant had been used as kind of a prop, used as a way to have the Lord with the Israelites during battle. But because they weren't where they needed to be, they hadn't repented, the Lord wasn't with them in battle, regardless of whether the Ark was there or not. And so the Ark was stolen. Hophni and Phinehas, Eli's sons, were killed. And when this happened, word got back to Eli that his sons were killed and the Ark was taken and he dies. He had lived 98 years, having judged Israel for 40 of those years. So we are looking at this. At this point, 20 years later, the ark is in. The ark was with the Philistines for a few months. They couldn't handle it, so they moved it to Kirjath. Well, they moved it to Beth. It was moved, I should say, to Beth Shemesh, and then they moved it to Kirjath-Jearim. And Kirjath-Jearim, it stayed there for 20 years, but not 20 years in total, because we see in 2 Samuel chapter 6, verse. Well, 2 Samuel chapter 6, that is when David takes the Ark of the Lord from Kirjath-Jearim. Now, it's called there Baal Judah, which is the same place. We can see that it's the same place. It's referred to the same thing as in the book of Joshua. It's also called that in 1 Chronicles. So we will definitely look at that event when we get to reign of David. But at this time, we see it's been there for 20 years before Samuel tells the people that they need to repent, and they go up and subdue the Philistines and later on in chapter 7. So between the death of Samuel and, or rather the death of Eli, and 1 Samuel chapter 7 is 20 years. These are the 20 years of Samson's judgeship. And that's because of the 20 years of Samson's judgeship, because of the age that I already talked about with him. And later on, we were talking about the 20 years talked about in 1 Samuel chapter 7, and then the Philistines being beaten back at the end of that period. So that's why I have them there. Eli dies. Once Eli dies, Samson begins his judgeship. And so that's why I placed them in this location and all the things that happened previously. One thing I want to talk about as well, if we remember in 1 Samuel chapter 3, we see that the Lord comes to Samuel by night to give him a message concerning Eli and what would happen to him. Now, I believe, of course, it takes place between the age of 0 and 20, and that's, again, my idea of when things begin, but for certain people. So I guess that Samuel is around 20 or around 10 when the Lord comes to him and tells Samuel about what's going on here. That could be wrong, that could be right. I don't know, but that's why I have that's where I place that in this particular timeline. Let's see. All right. So after Samuel conquers the Philistines, it says at the end of 1 Samuel chapter 7 that he judged Israel all the days of his life. And then in chapter 8 and verse 1, and we'll read a few verses of that. Now it came to pass when Samuel was old that he made his sons judges over Israel. The name of his firstborn was Joel, and the name of his second Abijah. They were judges in Beersheba. But his sons did not walk in his ways. They turned aside after dishonest gain, took bribes, and perverted justice. Then all the elders of Israel gathered together and came to Samuel at Ramah and said to him, "Look, you are old, and your sons do not walk in your ways. Now make us a king to judge us like all the nations." So we see in this particular passage that Samuel is considered old in 1 Samuel chapter 8. And I have in my timeline in 1 Samuel chapter 8 that Samuel is 76. Now, this is the gap that I see between the reign of Saul and the end of the Philistine, the end of the Philistine oppression. I believe that there's a gap here of 36 years. So we see Samuel is born at around the beginning of Philistine oppression, and it's 40 years of Philistine oppression, and then an additional 36 years between his between the end of Philistine oppression and the beginning of Saul's reign. Now we know how long Saul's reign is, and we'll look at this next time, but we know how long it is based on Acts chapter 13, that there's a passage in there that says that Saul's reign was 40 years. So we are basing it off of this. Now, we think 36 years, that's an odd number. Why not 40 years? Everything else is 40 years. Well, it's possible. Remember, this is based off of the timestamp of Jephthah, saying that he was that it was 300 years by that point since the Israelites conquered the areas east of the Jordan. And so, again, I believe that's a rounded figure. So it could very well, we could very well push that up 4 years so that Samuel his judgeship for 40 years before the reign of Saul. But the Bible doesn't say that, so I'm not going to move it. I'm going to treat all 300 of those years as significant digits, if you're familiar with that, even if it might not be. So, because those are the numbers that the Bible gives, and that's the reason why I'm doing it that way. Again, we can move it around a little bit if we need to, but I don't think that's entirely justified. All right, so he is considered old at 76. His children do not walk in his ways. Remember, and it's one of the things. We look at people like Eli, who lived to 98. We look at Moses, who lived to 120. If Moses indeed did write Psalm 90, it shows that the average lifespan is about 70 or 80, and that he lived an unusually long life, Moses did, to be 120. His brother Aaron living to 123, his sister Miriam at the youngest, 127. And so it's one of those things. I don't think it's a common thing for people to have lived long lives back then. I think it was something that was unusual but not unheard of. As we mentioned in some classes ago, the average age of the line of David from Solomon to David for the birth of the next son is 95 years, around 90 something years. And that's unusual. I believe it was unusual back then, but it does show that God doesn't do things like we might think he should. And so So that's one of the neat things about scripture and about how God does things. All right, so we are looking at how old Samuel is. It says I believe he was 76 at this time when they say that he's old. Later we'll see he lived well over 100. I don't have a time for when he died specifically, except that it's over 106. But we'll look at that when we get to the reign of Saul. So I have here when it talks about Saul and the rest of this section between chapters 8 to 12, we see that in chapter 8 that Samuel gives this is what a king is going to be like. In chapter 9, they find Saul. Saul is trying to find his father's flock. His father's, what was it? Father's animals, his donkeys. And we'll talk again more about that in the next class about Saul, about how old Saul is during this time. But he is found, and he is a humble man to start off with anyway. When it comes time to find out who the next king would be in chapter 10, he hides. He doesn't tell anybody about this. But he goes on, and he is eventually chosen, and the people are kind of against it, at least a good number of them, until Nahash the Ammonite decides to attack Jabesh-Gilead, or at least try to conquer them. Well, does that name Jabesh-Gilead ring a bell? It should, because this was the same town in Judges chapter 21 that was utterly destroyed. Everyone was killed in Jabesh-Gilead except for 400 women who had not known a man. So, and they were all given to the tribe of Benjamin, so they likely didn't stay in Jabesh-Gilead. But we see that Jabesh-Gilead is able to be conquered again. So this lends credence to the idea that Judges chapter 17 through 21 do not necessarily take place toward the end of the period of the Judges. Because if they did, would Jabesh-Gilead have been able to recover so quickly? Well, I don't think so. I don't think so. If it happens near the beginning of the Judges, perhaps even just after Joshua dies, then this gives Jabesh-Gilead a chance to recover. More people come in from around the area. Perhaps even, maybe Benjamin takes it. I don't know. It seems unlikely, but because of the placement of Jabesh-Gilead on the east side of the Jordan. So the Ammonites, Nahash the Ammonite comes and says, well, we're gonna get you. And then Saul eventually, they say, hold on, let's see what our guys over here say. And so Saul eventually comes up and attacks them and kills, and beats back the Ammonites. And we see that some of the character of Saul, we see that he is a good man at first. That the people who were going, that did not want him to be king, who doubted him, some of the people who were on Saul's side to begin with said that they should die because of how they doubted him. Well, Saul's like, no, don't kill them, they're on our side now. And so that shows a good characteristic of Saul. Doesn't stay that way, obviously, as we'll talk about when we get there. At the end of chapter 11, Saul is coronated king. He is made king of Israel. And at the end, in chapter 12, Samuel gives an address to the people. And he talks about how you wanted a king, and here he is. And the people are like, we, you know, how have we sinned? What are we going to do? And Samuel is like, no, it's okay. This is what God wants now. You'll be okay. You'll be fine. I'll continue praying for you that things will be fine. One interesting thing I want to look at, though, is in around verses 10 and 11. Samuel gives a little recap of the period of the judges, and I want to talk about this just a little bit. Then they cried out to the Lord and said, "We have sinned because we have forsaken the Lord and served the Baals and Ashtoreths. But now deliver us from the hand of our enemies, and we will serve you." And the Lord sent Jerubbaal, Bedan, Jephthah, and Samuel, and delivered you out of the hand of your enemies on every side, and you dwelt in safety. Well, if you have some footnotes for any of these, then you'll note that there's some question about these names. First off, Jerubbaal, in some manuscripts, in some versions, it says it's Deborah. In others, it says it's Gideon. Well, first off, Jerubbaal is Gideon. We can read that plainly in Judges chapter 6. In the next one, it says Bedan. Now, Bedan is nowhere found in the book of Judges, so who is Bedan? Well, looking at the Hebrew, we can see that, well, remember, of course, that there is no such thing as vowels in Hebrew, and you kind of have to guess later on what the vowels need to be. But remember that the D and the R in Hebrew look very much alike. I mean, they are almost identical. There's this little flag on the D, and it's very possible that someone misread it and wrote it down, and I'm not sure which one, the writer of Judges or the ones who copied Judges or the ones who copied 1 Samuel. So whichever is the case, you have the possibility that there is a little error there. We also note that the ending in verse, well, in the N and the K, in Hebrew anyway, look very similar as well. And so it's possible that someone could have misread both, and that's why we have Bedan instead of Barak. And so that's certainly possible. Also, it says the next one, Samuel or Simpson. That's probably referring to Samson. So all these are just the names of judges, and Samuel and Samson look similar as well, not entirely, of course, in terms of how they're spelled, and so someone might have made a little copyist error at some point along the way. And sometimes that happens, and that's okay. We can be rest assured that there is no contradiction in Scripture, because either of them is correct. Samuel was sent, Samson was sent, Barak was sent, Jerubbaal or Gideon was sent, Deborah was sent. So all of these could very well be accurate. Ultimately, of course, it does not change doctrine. And that's sort of the important thing that we need to recognize, is that despite the differences that are presented, the timelines and doctrines do not change. It's not a real big deal at all. And so that's certainly something to consider. All right. Next time, we will be looking at the period of Saul, the reign of Saul. And we're going to start the kingdom years. You have a homework assignment, if you're following along, and that is to look at 1 Samuel chapter 13 and verse 1 in various translations. And And that is a confusing verse. And we'll look at that more in depth next time. We'll also, in the next unit, talk about the Psalms. And I'm trying to place the Psalms, and that is impossible. I have ended up, at least by myself, I have ended up resorting to a somebody else's idea of when the Psalms, or at least what the Psalms are talking about. Now, some of them are labeled, obviously, and so definitely put those where they need to go. Some of them are confusing because we have, for instance, one is talking about Cush the Benjamite. Well, there's no mention of a Cush the Benjamite in the narrative at all. So where do we place that? We'll talk about that later on. Of course, some of them are much more obvious, like when David was fleeing Doeg the Edomite. Now that's an obvious. We can obviously place that. That's an easy one to place. So some of these are easy. Some of them have no inscription at all. Some of them just say they're a Psalm of David, and we'll definitely place the ones, about half the Psalms are written by David that we know about, and so we're going to place those in some way or another, and you'll see how we do that next time. All right, so thank you so much for listening and for being a great class. I am relieved to be through with the judges. It is very complicated but very interesting study, and the kingdom years will be a little bit more straightforward, with the exception of where to place the books of poetry, at least the book of Psalms, and also the prophets will be interesting as well, because not all of them are easy to map in the timeline. So we're going to start with Saul next week and move on from there. All right, very good.